and everything we had was so exciting at this particular time. I don't know how I got over that moat, to be quite frank with you. And then coming up here, I was looking, in actual fact, to see the wives. But I was looking for them, I couldn't see them at this stage. The response from the fans, it was absolutely fabulous. They were helping me up these stairs like nobody's business. And I was wondering, I remember Big Jock saying to me in the dressing room, you and Sean have to go and get the trophy. And I've got to be honest with you, I don't think I understood what he was saying. And he talked about it, and I said, what do you mean have to go and get the trophy? He said, you and Sean have got to go and get the trophy. So I had to leave a dressing room that was full of happy players, really enjoying themselves. And then I took the trophy here from the president. People ask me to this day, how did you manage to lift it above your head? And I don't know. I haven't a clue. I think I could have managed to lift the whole of the Blooming Stadium, to be honest with you, at one time. And it was wonderful. And if you look at it, you're up in a real high position here. And it was terrific. And I could see right around the whole stadium and the pitch and the people on the track just right in front of us here, green and white. And it was an interesting thing. The Milan supporters didn't disappear. They were here, loads of them, and they were applauding us. So they obviously had got something out of the game as well. The one part I would change, you know, we were a team, still are a team as it so happens. And the fact that all the boys weren't there with me is the one thing that I'd like to alter. And if I could do that, that is what a permanent wish would be.
Hello and welcome to the Burst Ball podcast. Yes, we're back after 2 weeks officially. Our last emergency Scotland podcast doesn't technically count as a numerical statistic in our wee count we have going on.
It's not canon. That episode's not canon.
Yes. So sorry to the boys who appeared in the last podcast. You weren't actually ever on. But this week we are back after our 2 week hiatus with this new format we're going for. And to do that, once again, I'm joined by Andrew Gamba, aka David Attenborough, who joins us from his garden.
Yes, hello. Everything in my house, I think it is either in the 19th century or an EMP's gone off. So I'm having to record this outside. So it will sound like I'm either at the side of the M74 or in the middle of the wilderness. So I do apologise for that in advance. But I mean, if you can figure out what kind of, you know, bird song in the background is going on, then yeah, feel free. Send in whatever you think's in the background.
The Billy Birds. I think they're called. yes, Gamba's at one with birds and bees, and we also have Tom McKinnon from the slightly more familiar surroundings, hopefully from just his room or house.
Yeah, I was contemplating going up Ben Nevis for this podcast, but I thought I'd let Gamba have that honour. So no, just sit at my desk. Looking forward to going through the Scottish accent in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. As with the new format that we are now sort of going by, we're not sort of going over, picking the bones over every single match from the weekend's action. That's why we've kind of moved to every 2 weeks. Gamba, if you want to, I mean, by all means. But
to be fair, there was decent scenes at the bottom of the table, but I think it's kind of confirmed what we've known for quite a wee while, especially when it comes to Dundee.
Indeed, we will come on to Dundee.
Yes,
and other perils from other teams in Scotland. But I think it's only right we start with Ross County winning the championship. Second league in Scotland wrapped up this weekend with Ross County winning at
home,
Queen of the South, 4-0, pretty convincingly. Tom, I know you'll be disappointed that the sort of glimmer of hope that Dundee United had of coming up automatically is gone. But as I said to you, it's never really looked in doubt for Ross County since they salvaged the last gasp equaliser against your side up in Dingwall. It's been pretty professional from Ross County in the kind of final running, hasn't it? There's not really been many slip-ups.
Yeah, maybe the slightest bit of faltering, it would have taken an absolute miracle. That would have needed a massive goal swing, and Dundee United to be competent and very good for two games, which, touch wood, it looks like we're getting towards, but it's still a wee bit early to put that much pressure on a side. But no, it is a good achievement for Ross County to go straight down and back up again. But the management duo isn't the most likeable, so I'll keep my praise guarded for a wee bit longer.
The neutral as always. Tom touched on it there, Gamba, but obviously Ross County back at the first time of asking, which is pretty impressive.
Yes.
Given what Hearts, Hibs, and obviously Dundee United, don't want to make Tom break down in tears, but it is those sort of the plight of those three teams in this division who didn't come back up at the first time of asking sort of proves how achievement that is.
Absolutely, absolutely. And considering the manner in which they went down last season, going straight down, and you look at Thistle and look at the position that they're in this season, who arguably were a better team because they finished ahead of them in the league table last year, but clearly not the case. They're fighting for their lives again. And Ross County, okay, I know they've spent a decent amount, but you know, there are a lot of teams that are in that division that have played Premiership football within the last decades, and you know, you know, they haven't been able to do it again. And Ross County down, straight back up, incredibly impressive considering some of the teams that are in that division and considering a lot of other things, and other teams that were in the Premiership last season. I was the same with Thistle. Incredible achievement to get straight back up the first time of asking. I really at the start of the season I thought, right, Dundee United will get their act together, shows what I know, shows what it should be for putting faith in them. But incredible achievement for Ross County, really, really impressive.
Yeah, and I think there was only one defeat at home, which remarkably I think was against Alloa. Tom, is that right? You'll know probably better than me. I think Alloa beat Ross, were the only team to beat Ross County at home.
It could be true. I'm currently halfway up Ben Nevis, so I've not got my stats handy.
Right, okay. so I think they're kind of surged the titles based on that home form that they sort of strung all those results together. I don't think their away form is particularly fantastic. But obviously got their act together after going down last season. Must be just one of these classics, cliches that a team needs to get relegated before they can get their act together. Tom, you'll still be hoping that that's the case for Dundee United. I did sort of touch on Dundee United's form there before I sort of ask a question of you both. Do you think that, obviously, you don't want the sort of good form of late to go to waste. Do you think it's important Dundee United sort of take sort of a few wins on the bounce going into the playoffs? Do you think that has any bearing on what will happen, or do you think the playoffs is just a complete lottery?
I'm not the biggest fan of playoffs, not just because of personal experiences in the last couple of years, but it is quite, and I've said it before, I'm not just saying that now, but I think it is heavily weighted in terms of the second place finish in the championship, because you get a week off, as opposed to having to cram two games in there, and you don't have the crushing, potentially crushing morale that is finishing 11th in the Premiership. But if it could be Dundee, it won't be. They'll be on a high, whereas you'd imagine if it's Hamilton or St Mirren, then they'll be feeling a bit down about themselves. And this is the best year for Dundee United, not just in terms of opposition that they could face, but also the fact that they've got a competent manager who's got a very good set of players at his disposal, something we've not had for 3 years, and with the added bonus of not having to fit two games in 4 days for 3 weeks.
Yeah. Obviously, Ross County up with 71 points. Dundee United are 6 points behind them, obviously with just one game to play. So Ross County are champions. Is there an argument to be made for the two managers at Ross County to be managers of the year in Scotland overall?
I don't think so. I think they have done a very good job, but they were helped by the fact that the favourites for the division, Dundee United, had, just speaking about a competent manager for the first third of the season, a wholly incompetent manager in Shabba Laszlo with a vastly different squad, whereas you look at the jobs that other managers have done, Steve Clark, for example, Jim Goodwin, who I've been a massive champion of this season, I think he probably should win it. Obviously, Dick Campbell as well, massively overperformed. I don't think we need to downplay the achievement of Ross County, because it winning the league, as we've said, going from coming down straight back up is brilliant, and through it with inexperienced managers and in a fairly competitive division, as we're seeing with how tight it is a great achievement. But I think Dick Campbell and Stevie Clark, Jim Goodwin, all probably just edge them out of it just now.
Yeah, pretty impressive that they managed to kind of keep the decent run of form going with their top goalscorer Billy Mackay out towards the running end of the season. Gamba, do you think? Where do you think, or where does a little birdie on your shoulder think that Ross County will cope in the Premiership next season?
Well, I mean, recent history would suggest that they would probably do okay. It'll be interesting to see, especially if they keep the squad that they've got, whether they decide to throw money at it again. I think they are probably better than it'll be interesting. I think they will be safe next season. I don't think they'd go straight back down, mainly because I think St Mirren and Hamilton will probably survive, but I think Ross County are probably better than those two. But I think it'll be interesting whether St Mirren and Hamilton were to strengthen, or whether they were to just keep going with what they're doing. But I don't think we'll see them straight back down in the Championship. I think they will be okay.
Yeah. Okay, though. Tom, do you echo that view? Do you think Ross County will be okay next season?
I'm not sure. They've got a very good Championship side. The dross that Dundee have been this season will be gone, probably. Livingston, you'd imagine, won't replace Dundee in that respect. I think if you look at the budget, probably people might expect. I don't think they'll thrive, but they have got a good setup to avoid going straight back down again.
Yeah, I think that's one thing you could level at Ross County, is the good setup they have, and they're definitely not lacking in money. I think Roy McGregor's purse strings are always a bit loose up there. So I think... personally, for me, Ross County will be sort of a 8th, 9th place finish next season. I mean, it wasn't too long ago that they finished top 6 in the top flight. Obviously, different squad, different manager. But I do like the look of the way that the sort of co-managers at Ross County operate and the club itself. And I think that there'll be a welcome addition back to the Scottish Premiership. So well done to them. I've not actually ever been to Dingwall. So I might try and make up there next season. Tom, you might yet be joining us. You never know.
Fingers crossed.
So Ross County are going up. Going down, it definitely looks like it will be Dundee. I mean, they're 7 points adrift with 3 games to play, albeit they do have to play St Mirren, Hamilton, and is there another game, Livingston? Is that right?
Yeah.
So it is games against teams around about them, but you're relying on St Mirren kind of losing their last 3 games and the kind of sort of solid wee run they've put together. It doesn't look like that would be the case, especially when they're playing teams around about them. We said we weren't going to pick over individual games in this kind of new format we're doing, but by God, that was a bit of a shambles at the weekend, Gamble, wasn't it? if Dundee ever had any hope of surviving, they had to get something out of a game where they were playing against 10 men for half an hour.
That was the thing. I know there was that post on that Dundee Facebook group, and it was just like, look, it's simple. Dundee just have to win games of football if they want to stay up. And it's like, well, I mean, ultimately, yes, it actually is that simple. And you've scored 3 goals away from home, you're playing against 10 men, that should be enough to win you a game of football. It wasn't, and they managed to lose it in the worst way possible with the last minute. It epitomises why they're probably going to go straight down. Just not being able to do the fundamentals. I mean, scoring 3 goals away from home, mad, you know, brilliant, fantastic. Again, it's the reason we said this around about the start of the season. I'm pretty sure Ryan, it was yourself. Callum Scott, I believe, was on the podcast as well. We were like, It's going to be Dundee and St Mirren. I don't know what way they're going to. I don't know what way the two of them are going to be in at the bottom, but they're going to go down because they are bad football teams, and it's just one of those ones where like you can tell they've given everything there, and it just still hasn't quite been enough.
Hmm. Tom, obviously you've been closely linked to Dundee this season. Mm-hmm. They weren't ever going to get a better chance than against a Motherwell team who don't really have anything to play for. They hadn't won in three games. And they were down to 10 men and were bringing on youngsters as well. Not that that's any indication that you should automatically win, but the incentive was there, and it's now 9 defeats in a row for Dundee. I take it you're envisaging them going down, is that right?
Yeah, I am. And thanks for saying I'm closely linked to the club, because it makes me sound like I'm on the verge of a transfer there.
and we never know, permanently.
Yeah. By the way, Jim McIntyre and John Nelms, not in a million years, will never reach that low, but... No, I think writing the programme for the Hamilton game next weekend will be fun, having to interview one of the players, and Christ knows what I'm going to ask them and what they're going to say. I don't think they could say anything really in this case.
Favourite championship ground?
I think I might leave that one out of the 20 questions. But you just... It almost sums up the season that James Horsfield got booked for time wasting when they were 3-3, when a point would be good, a lot better than getting beat 4-3 in the last minute. But 3 points there, and it, as you said, a game that if Motherwell were to lose, they're probably not going to be defending it tooth and nail, and disconsolate if they get beat. So why they wouldn't just pile on the pressure instead of getting booked for time wasting? It's really disappointing, and the atmosphere in the club at the moment is just toxic. McIntyre's getting it, John Nelms is getting it, the players are getting it, maybe not to quite the same extent, because I think there are some half-decent players in that squad.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, the statistics are absolutely grim reading, so there's no way you can sort of have a go at the Dundee fans for being upset. I mean, it's 35 games played, 4 wins. They've only scored 28 goals, which is only 3 more than Hamilton, who have the least goals in the Premiership this season, and they've conceded 74. 9 games in a row defeated, and only 18 points from 35 games. I mean, it is absolutely dire. Mm-hmm. But as you just said yourself, I mean, what has been the problem? Because they do have a decent squad. Jim McIntyre has proven in the past that he is a decent manager. Do you think it's just a confidence thing that they've never managed to pick themselves up off the floor?
I don't think it was the right appointment. I'm sure if you go back and listen to episode probably 220, I'll be sitting there saying I think Jim McIntyre will keep them up, because I've said Dundee might stay up a lot this season. But if you look at the way Neil McCann was playing and the players that he had, okay, a lot of them were absolute dross, and a lot of them have been released. Even some of the good ones who I thought maybe would have been worth keeping, obviously you don't know if they were released through budget concerns, so they did bring in a lot in January to try and suit McIntyre's play. Obviously that hasn't worked given how little points they've picked up, but the way that Neil McCann played was quite specific. He, in his credit, wanted to get the ball down and play through the team, and I'm not McIntyre isn't some sort of dinosaur manager who wants to just give it to Dundee and he'll lump it up towards a striker like Craig Curran. It's slightly more sophisticated than that. He does like to get the ball out wide, and he did try to change it. He sort of almost reverted a wee bit back to what McCann was doing. McCann didn't really play with wingers a lot of the time. That's Deacon struggled this season, and obviously was released under McIntyre. But there maybe could have been a halfway house between those two managers. I'm not sure who it is, but I think the two changes in the... that was represented in the amount of players that they had to bring in, which is not always a good sign. It's worked a wee bit at Dundee United, but there was a bit of a period where it didn't really look like it was going to work, and we'd spent a lot of money in a championship where we were always going to finish the playoffs, really, when Nielsen was coming in. There was a time for that allowed to happen, but in the Premiership where it just seemed to be defeat after defeat, and it has been defeat after defeat at the moment, that's 9 in a row. For Dundee, there isn't really that sort of breathing space, or there wasn't that breathing space for McIntyre, and Dundee didn't really have too much of a chance to get it wrong, and he did get it wrong. They've only won once at home this season, That was against Hamilton. They were really quite good. Kenny Miller got a hat trick, and you thought from there maybe not only was that a win against a rival, but it was a big win against a rival where everything seemed to work, everything seemed to come off. You could see what Jim McIntyre tried to do. I think the only player he'd brought in at that stage was Woods, and he looked really good in front of the back four. And you thought, right, that's it. That's them built this platform. The players can see what they want, what Jim McIntyre wants, and McIntyre can see the players that purely can trust now if they can beat. Because they don't need to go in the Premiership, they only need 30 points to stay up. They don't need to be going and beating Celtic and Rangers every weekend. They need to beat the teams around them. Mm-hmm. And you thought, once they've done that against Hamilton, you can see everyone, the fans can see what they wanted. Because there was a clear way of playing. They worked hard and created chances for Miller, who, despite probably being their best striker, I think Andy Nelson might have something to say about that, but he's struggled with injury since he's come in. Hasn't really been that much of a mainstay in the side, and he's preferred Craig Curran, who is at Dundee United at the start of the season, and I'm not 100% sure what he brings to the game of football at that level. He wasn't great for the United in the Championship, and a team that will have a lot of the ball and have a lot of the chances. And then you totally change that to Dundee side, where he's not going to have a lot of the ball and he's not going to have a lot of chances. Is that really the environment that suits him? And then you've got a player like Kenny Miller. Yes, he's quite old, and long term you're probably not going to get a lot from him, but he is still someone that has proven this season that he can score goals if he gets the chances, like he did against Hamilton. And he's just not really giving him too much of a look in. Defence hasn't been good enough, midfield's not been good enough, up front's not been good enough, and the goalkeepers, he's had three first team keepers this season. Jack Hamilton, who they paid money for, which needs to be remembered, with the idea that he could play at the back for Neil McCann, and it took him 80 minutes to show that he couldn't play at the back in the league after giving away a vital win for St Mirren, which could have been really costly. It maybe doesn't matter too much now given the distance between them, but if it came down to that end of the season, the difference between the point and St Mirren getting the win, it could have been massive. But he had Elliot Parrish, who is not really very good either, and then Senny Dieng, who I think has been the best of the lot, a decent shot stopper, but my goodness, that does not mean he's a good goalie. And I think that's something that's kind of proven true in the last few weeks. I think just maybe at the start of this 9-in-a-row run, I think he was one that escaped a lot of criticism because he had made a lot of quite good saves. He was quite good against Celtic, I remember, when they got the last minute goal under Lennon. But almost since, he still comes away as Dundee's best keeper of the season, but that's not an award I'd be putting on my mantelpiece. And the changes haven't really worked, right? As I said, it's made for really quite bad view, and obviously interviewing a lot of the players this season, you get the same thing every Monday. Oh, we've been training so hard, and disappointing at the weekend, because I think I've done the programme twice after wins, once after wins. I can't, honestly, it's such a long season, and it's all, we know what we have to do, we know we can do it, we need to believe in ourselves, and then you just get the same rubbish on the Saturday.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the inevitable happens, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, being so close to the players in terms of just speaking to them regularly, do you get the sense that they actually buy into what McIntyre was telling them, or do you just feel that it's just the usual, you're just getting a generic robotic media line, and that they'd rather the season was over? Do you think that they were ever actually up for a relegation battle? Because, I mean, they've certainly not really shown any signs of it. I mean, obviously they sort of corrected their goal-scoring problems against Motherwell, but at the back it was just equally as bad. So do you think that they were ever actually up for it? Do you think McIntyre had like a motivation problem with them?
I don't know, I wouldn't go that far, but the overriding emotion I always got from them was that they were quite tired. You would have the general chit chat before and they would say, oh, it was a hard session. You got the impression they weren't just saying that and they weren't just looking to get you out of the way. There was a sort of virtually every player was saying, well, that was a hard session, they work you hard, because obviously a lot of the players that they signed in January, and even that McCann signed, but a lot of them have moved on already, hadn't really played in Scotland before, and they thought, well, maybe they were right, but they really struggled with the sort of pace of it, which is a bit worrying, because I wouldn't say it's the fastest league. I think if the worst player do tend to get found out, but it's not like the Bundesliga, or to a lesser extent the Premier League, where everyone's on you all the time. think if you're a good enough player, you've got time on the ball. Whereas a few of the players, particularly after January and near the start of the season, said, oh, you don't get any time on the ball, which you watch a lot of Scottish football, obviously. Very, very far away from playing in Scottish football, but watching it, you don't get the sense that if you're a competent, good player, that the pace of the game should be the hardest problem. But I didn't get the impression that they weren't really buying into him. I think obviously the fact that he brought into a lot of his players that there wasn't this sort of Neil McCann's the manager and this guy's just come in and try to change everything. He did change everything. He changed a lot of the playing staff, so there can't really be too many complaints on that side. He's not isolated a lot of the players that McCann favoured, but fan favourites like Cammy Kerr and even Kenny Miller haven't really been in the team as much, particularly Cammy Kerr, who is quite representative of the Dundee fans. He's not had his best season, and I wouldn't say tailed off since he had his breakthrough year, but hasn't looked quite as good. But maybe the sort of players that you want to be playing for Dundee in a relegation fight, Dundee fans, if you've got any that are quite good and probably of the standard, if not better than the players you've just signed. But I would say it's too harsh to say that they didn't buy into McIntyre, but it clearly hasn't worked at so many levels, from the signings to the way they've played, the way that McIntyre's tried to get them to play, and even higher above that than in John Nelms and his relationship with the fans, because that seems to be the whole bit over now.
Yeah. Pretty conclusive stuff. I think there's more chance of Gamba getting a decent internet connection than somebody staying up. So I think it's pretty much curtains for them. And to continue with the sort of depressing topic of relegation and jobs being at stake, we will speak about Falkirk. Obviously 3 points off of Alloa going into the last round of fixtures next week. It's not looking good for Falkirk, is it, Gamba? They did kind of show signs of a mini resurrection midway through the season, but they never really managed to keep that going, and it looks like it's going to be a League One campaign for them next season, doesn't it?
Yeah, they can still... Who's the final game against? This is the important one. It's a horrific fixture, I remember.
It's at home to Ross County, who they'll be hoping to have a bit of a hangover.
So they need to win that and hope that Alloa and Queen of South, or either one of those two, lose to get a playoff spot. That's not good, considering that they would be looking at getting promoted this season, where they have ended up. I mean, it would, I'm sure we'll hear from Johnny on this, but it's one of these things that'd be interesting to hear where all these things went wrong. I know he'll say right at the start of the season, when you allow so many changes to be made and then none of these guys end up playing later on in the season. I mean, infrastructure wise, them getting rid of the academy, am I right in thinking?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
To put the funds into players that could play to get them back in the Premiership, and there's a very decent chance now they're going to be playing League One football next season. That's not good. That's really not good. Just misstep after misstep after misstep. And, if the season had panned out the way a lot of people would have thought when it comes to Alloa, maybe we'd be looking at this going, they can maybe save their skin on the last day and escape a relegation playoff spot. But I think the best they are looking at is a relegation playoff spot, because they need a insane swing to get ahead of Queen of the South, don't they? It's like, is it they need a 10 goal swing,
yes,
to finish ahead of them. I remember that. So basically they're looking at a playoff spot when they could come up against like Raith Rovers or something like that.
Yeah, obviously the playoffs for the Championship and League One are a lot less weighted towards the team who finishes ninth in the Championship, so it's a bit more of a difficult task. It's not looking good for Falkirk. Obviously our resident podcaster, Johnny Clark, to sort of give his opinion on Falkirk, just given he's closely linked to Falkirk, here he is, sort of speaking about Falkirk's plight.
It's been, unfortunately, another poor weekend for Falkirk with a 2-0 loss at Dundee United. I think results have kind of gone their way elsewhere in the league, which is fortunate. The only result that really mattered was Alloa, who were 1-0 up against Inverness at half-time, and that's a result, that's a scoreline that Alloa have seen out, I think, in their last two home games against Queens and Ross County, so it wasn't looking good at all. In fact, Falkirk would have been all but relegated with that result staying the same. But Inverness, despite the fact that they didn't actually need anything from that game, have actually gone and turned it round. So Falkirk pretty much have Inverness to thank for the fact that they're not already down going into the last day. It's still possible to stay up, but looking increasingly unlikely, a win over champions Ross County. Of course, the fact that Ross County wrapped up the league on Friday means that they maybe come down a bit more relaxed, I think. Marcus Fraser was saying that they got a day off training this, they're having a day off training this coming week, so maybe they'll come a bit relaxed, you know, and that'll give Falkirk a chance. But even then, they're still relying on Alloa not picking up any points at Ayr, who haven't got anything to play for. Mind you, that didn't matter when they played Inverness, so you know, it's not over yet, but it certainly looks like Falkirk are going to be playing League One football next season, which is to be an absolute travesty, a club of that size. You know, when they came down, it's been a decade now in the second tier, which is in itself a tragedy for a club of that size. But to be leaving it finally and going the wrong way is almost unthinkable. I think the support have become totally disillusioned with the board, with the chief executive and the chair, the chairman. Unfortunately, at this point, it's looking like a relationship that's going to be untenable going forward, and as well in the last couple of weeks they seem to have become completely fed up with the manager McKinnon as well. McKinnon came out after the game and said Falkirk would have taken being 3 points behind with a game to go. Falkirk fans would have taken that when he took over, so that's upset the fans as well. Of course, McKinnon, who was so popular at the start, it's a situation that he's not really been in yet as Falkirk manager. So whether he remains in charge next season when they, probably when they go down next weekend, remains to be seen. I think he would do a good job in the third tier personally, but whether the fans have turned is another question. I probably think that they have at this point. But as I say, for a club of Falkirk size to be playing third tier football is unthinkable, and extremely damaging for everybody involved with the club. So I can only hope that there's not too many futures sort of dependent on that at the club as well.
Thanks to Johnny for that. moving on, we will, I know the guy spoke about it last week, but obviously there's been a few names chucked about since then. Scotland job.
Oh no. Oh,
on the day of recording, I did see Stephen Gerrard pass a comment suggesting that the next Scotland boss has to be Scottish. Is this a statement you agree with, Gamba?
No.
Does he have to be Scottish? Does
no.
he?
No.
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 Who would you? What name would you chuck into the ring? That is obviously of a foreign persuasion.
Again, it's a difficult one because any name you would mention, they'd be too smart to actually take that job. They wouldn't do it. If things don't work out at Leeds with Bielsa, I'd like that, because I think that should have probably happened last time.
Mm-hmm. When he was out of a job, yeah.
Because I know on the day of recording this, it's kind of been confirmed that they're going to be in the playoff. If that goes wrong, and he does kind of have the temperament to leave jobs. I mean, he left, Tom, I know your knowledge of European football's pretty good. Did Bielsa not leave Marseille after like two games or something like that a couple of years ago? So it's not as if he, you know, it's not as if he has the kind of reputation where he's going to stay for something for long. So if things go wrong with Leeds, he might leave. But then again, he could walk into that Scotland setup and go, what the fuck is this? And just walk out after a game or two. I don't know. I mean, it looks as if it might be Davy Moyes, because he was at a lot of games this weekend.
I mean, I know that, obviously, speaking to Johnny, and he said that he wouldn't be adverse to that being the case. But I mean, personally for me, that's just more of the same. Kind of the sort of old pals gig at the SFA again, that it's just a bit of a tired line in terms of he just kind of fits in with the same kind of mindset philosophies that feel like the other managers have brought to the table at Scotland, which I think everyone's just a bit bored of. I think the main thing here is that there's a bit of apathy set in with the national team, and there needs to and I think you're not alone. Well, no, you're certainly not alone in your garden, as we can hear, but in terms of fellow Scotland supporters, I think most people are done, most people are fed up, most people don't really care, and I would include myself in that until something changes with the way the national team is run. Just something a wee bit different, a bit exciting. And I've actually been, Derek Ray's Twitter's been quite exciting. He's a big sort of advocate of getting managers in that, but doesn't necessarily need to be Scottish. And he was said he spoke to Bruce Arena, who actually said he'd be interested in the Scotland job. I mean, he has been out of a job for about a year. His last gig was the managing the national team of the United States, but he did take them to the last date of a World Cup, and has a pretty decent record with sort of big clubs in America. It's definitely these kind of names that are being chucked about, that just something a wee bit different, something a wee bit more exciting that would get fans back on board. Do you think somebody like that is ideal, Tom? I mean, obviously it sounds nice and on paper and saying it and all that kind of thing, but do you think he's and people like him are realistic targets for Scotland, or do you think it'll just be people like Moyes that would be interested in the Scotland job?
Yeah, sorry, just an edit and note there first that Lazio, Bielsa was at Lazio for 2 days before he left.
Right, right. Thank you.
Same club.
he didn't last much longer at Lille last season either, but no, I would love him, but I fear he might be a wee bit out of our price range. Bruce Arena, I don't know too much about, but I've seen a few Scottish Twitter accounts that follow American sports and MLS not being too enthused by him. I don't think he's the most exciting manager. I jokingly said when McLeish was sacked that we should get Sam Allardyce on Twitter, to which in some parts I was ridiculed, and this was only half tongue-in-cheek. I'm not sure I'd want, I'm that bothered if he's Scottish or English or wherever he's from. And I understand Sam Allardyce isn't the most nicest person in the world, with a very dodgy recent background anyway.
Would he shake Maradona's hand? That's the only thing that matters.
Well, I mean, he has a tendency to leave jobs pretty early as well, doesn't he?
My thinking has been, though, that my criteria would be, will they get to the tournament? Not will they be able to develop a system? I think that should be done from above a manager, a national team manager, because I think when you realistically think about it, you're not going to get an Oscar Tabárez at Uruguay. He's going to be there for decades, who can sort of oversee everything. You're going to get someone realistically who's either at the end of their career and not wants one last paycheck but wants one last challenge potentially, or you're going to get someone who will think, all right, I can take the Scotland squad into a tournament and go and get a better job after it, or someone who's going to fail and be gone within 2 years, if that. So I think the shelf life for most managers, 2 years, I think that's probably what you'll be looking at for the Scotland manager, maybe a bit longer if it is someone Scottish. But I think my main criteria is, will they get us to the tournament firstly? Because I think we are only two games away, because that's what it looks like it's going to come down to the Nations League now, and I think we've already scuppered the more traditional route. So I would like someone who could come in and organise a team, something McLeish clearly couldn't
always
do.
Always a positive.
Someone who basically just uses the qualifiers as practice for playoffs,
the two games that we have to save our bacon. I think the main thing for me is which it doesn't seem like worryingly has happened with the last few appointments, is you just need to do extensive research. Mm-hmm. Like, there will be people out there who want the Scotland job. It is an appealing job because, as you say, Tom, mm-hmm. you can sort of use it as a platform to then go on to bigger and better things. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd go down as a legend in Scotland for qualifying us for a, mm-hmm. a major tournament if you managed to do it, which, as you mentioned, you're only two games away from doing.
Mm-hmm. You do that, you live forever.
Exactly.
I'm fucking 23 and I don't remember France 98. So, like, you guys, well, I know we've spoken about something, you guys won't.
Vividly, of course.
So, like, you get to a stage where you're probably looking at an age range of what people who are 25 and under probably don't really have a good memory of Scotland playing at a major tournament.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all.
That's so, you know, that's a quarter of a century, and you'd be the first person in that kind of space of time to actually get Scotland to play in that major tournament. Mm-hmm. You'd be incredible. You'd. I mean, it's like you'd never have to buy a pint again. But genuinely, a whole nation would be grateful to you for just winning two fucking games of football. Who cares if we get clamped at European Championships? Honestly, you just have to win these two games.
At least we'd fucking be there, man. It's just like, assemble these candidates who have applied for the job, speak to them, just speak to people from different kind of backgrounds, different philosophies, and appoint the person who you think could reignite the Scottish national team, and get people falling back in love with the national team, because you would have to say, I mean, Gordon Strachan and Alex McLeish, if you met all your candidates, weighed them up in terms of your football philosophies, can you excite the fans, they surely would not have been the top picks if you were doing it properly, if you're going through a recruitment process properly. So then just comes again back down to the system that the SFA are working under, that needs to be right before you can get an appointment right. Mm-hmm. And I think this one's crucial, actually. I think this is a bit of a cornerstone moment for the national team, because, as you say, Gamba, there's a whole generation of Scotland fans who are the next generation of Scotland fans who haven't seen their team at a national, an international tournament, a major tournament. And it does get a bit draining. Like, I think as we Scotland fans, we would all agree we're kind of done. We're kind of fed up of seeing near misses and all that kind of thing. And people would rather spend their money doing things that they could actually enjoy rather than getting depressed watching Scotland play eye-bleeding football. So it's an important employment. It's an important appointment that they need to get right. Otherwise, certainly myself, probably you guys as well, will be done with the national team for quite a few years. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and but again, it's this thing where I just after that Slovenia game, that you need to win it to get into the playoff, and like we're actually already closer than we are that time. We're actually already closer to a major tournament than we were after that Slovenia game. And now it's just going into it, just going, I know they'll fuck this up. I know they will.
Yeah.
And it's just that kind of pessimism has always kind of been there when I've been watching Scotland, of just like, glorious failure, someone fuck up. But like, it gets to the stage where like, you could appoint someone who, I mean, I know the cliche is like Guardiola, but you could appoint someone who genuinely has a reputation of taking just absolute basket cases and turning them into well-oiled, well-drilled, you know, winning machines. And I would still go into it looking at a Scotland team and going, we're going to fuck this up somehow. It'll be 3-0 down to Serbia in about 13 minutes at Hampden. Just, you know, that somehow it'll go wrong. And I don't know what name you could realistically say will get the Scotland job where I could actually look at them and go, actually, nah, he would take it forward. And again, it doesn't have to be someone Scottish. As much as I'd like a guy like Steve Clarke or a Jack Ross to get the job, if it was someone who was Danish.
David Moyes.
Well, but you know, anyone,
dare I say,
like,
he's been like, named before, but Raymond Domenech, team of Capricorns, will lead us to glory at a major tournament.
You know, maybe that's the thinking that we need. Maybe we need more Libras in the midfield. Who knows?
Yeah.
Nah,
I have actually just looked up his Wikipedia, and the last thing on it says, post-national team management. In April 2018, he was one of 77 applicants for the vacant Cameroon national team job.
Hell
so
yeah.
Let's Hell hope yeah. he's one of five applicants for the Scotland national team job.
But yeah, I mean, like, it's just... There's no name that we could realistically get that I would be like, yeah, he's your man. Apart from Steve Clarke. But again, Clarke is too smart to take the Scotland job.
Yes.
Flash forward 3 months, and
Steve Clarke is in the Scotland job. Yeah. Aye, I think the SFA. Well, obviously, there's not any.
Oh yeah, and sorry, and of course, you actually have to remember that who's picking this person to take the job. You have to remember what the last appointment was.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Fuck me.
Well, I think that's what I meant in terms of the system that the SFA work with, that it's not really inspiring at the best of times. So
spinning a roulette wheel with a dart, throw at it, there you go. That's the next manager.
I think Russian roulette would be more fitting for some of the candidates. but anyway, right, let's hope the SFA don't rush into anything.
Russian roulette with a fully loaded gun after this conversation, man. Scotland manager, I hate this. Oh, God.
We'll move on to things a bit more positive in the way of Player of the Year nominees, people who have actually been good at football. Obviously, the Championship, League One and League Two Player of the Year nominees were released this week by the PFA in Scotland. So the Championship was Stephen Dobie, Billy Mackay, Tommy will be glad to know Sir Frank was in there, and Lauren Shankland. Who's your pick of those four, Tom?
You're actually wrong, sorry. I would not be glad to hear Pavel Safranco listed. I hope he is pivotal in taking something up, but I hope he does everything he does quietly and gets no lists, no goal of the seasons, because arguably he had two in the last 2 weeks that should be on there that were both left out probably too late, which was nice, because I think the more attention he gets
was pretty good.
The more attention he gets, the more likely he is, or the more Alberger likely to say, oh, give us this, give us that, or dare I say it, a better team come in with a bigger bid. But he has been really good. I think he was probably the one trying to get that fourth spot, and I think his second half of the season form has probably done that. He's been the best player at Dundee United this season. I don't think he'll win it, and I don't think he deserves to win it. I think that probably has to be Stephen Dobie, although he's tailed off since January. I think it was January, start tailing off, but
yeah,
the amount of goals he scored was incredible, and I think if
that goal alone at Pittodrie, I think he did.
the fact that Queen of South are where they are, and the fact that they're gonna avoid relegation because of the amount of goals they scored is clearly down to the fact of what Dobby's done. Shankland's had a similar season, maybe not as prolific in all competitions. I think we'll hear from him soon, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I'll come on to that in a second. Gamba, who gets your vote here?
I mean, as someone that keeps up to date with the results but doesn't watch as many live games as Tom, I think his assessment is probably right, because I would say a guy like Stephen Dobie. Like, just because of every single week we were talking about at the start of the season, we were going, okay, how many has he scored this week? How many points have they got as a result of it? And I remember, like, Lewis just sending me the highlights of one of the games that he went to go cover, and he was just like, this guy should not be in this division.
Nah.
And obviously there's a very personal connection there. But yeah, for me, looking at the league, looking at the results, looking at, from certainly what I've seen, not being as much as it has been the Premiership, that's who I would go to. But then again, it's interesting to hear Tom's views on that, and that I could be wrong with that assessment. But anyway,
Yes, thanks to Lewis Burrell, our friend of the podcast, we can actually hear from Lauren Shankland, who reacted to his Player of the Year nomination.
What are you season for you, I suppose?
It's been decent. Good return in that personally, but I'll say the team's done pretty well. Been in the top four all year, I've not committed, so it's been good.
You know, so a lot to look forward to, and still a lot to play for as well in the last couple of weeks. I mean, how difficult is it? Just try and kind of strike that balance if you want to win games to the end of the season, but it's always a playoff in the back of the mind.
It has been a bit, I think it's been seen in our performances earlier, results haven't been great, but we've secured playoffs, and that was the main objective for us, you know what I mean? And I think we'll probably, if we could fast forward today, we would. We've got a couple of games to go to play right enough, and it's big for the teams we're playing against. They're obviously fighting for our lives, so we need to approach them as professionally as we can, and then obviously the big ones are on the pitch.
It's almost a wee bit disappointing given the start you had to the season that you're in the playoffs now. Well, do you not look at it like that? Do you just see the opportunity?
Not at all. The infrastructure of the clubs in the league, you know what I mean? I'd be a bit of a miracle if we did win it, you know what I mean? In terms of squads and all that, but it was always going to be a tough task with what we have, and if we were being realistic, playoffs is probably our aim at the start of the season if it wasn't staying up.
Naeem
McLaughlin,
so the job he's done
in
the last couple of years, I mean, what can you say about the
gaffer? Personally, he's been great for me, but as a group, as you said, he's done great. He's got the club back for playing League One football with the Championship, most importantly, and then this season he recruited a team that was going to be able to challenge up the top end as opposed to being in the bottom and trying to survive. So I think he'll be delighted with that.
It's somewhat disappointing, though, in fact, obviously, Michael's moving on to Coventry at the end of the season. Yourself, let's talk about you moving on. There's a lot of players potentially moving on as well. Mikey Smith's leaving. Is that a disappointing thing? It's just the fact that the club's been that good, that the squad's going to be kind of broken up in a way, to kind of end of the year, I suppose.
It could be, yeah. It's been good for everybody, I think. It's worked both ways. Ed have been good enough to give boys a chance, like myself, and to manage to find yourself a platform to go and try and get a move again. And I think all the boys that they move on will be grateful to her for what they've done, and it does leave them a bit of a hard task to replace other players that they might lose. But I think the bigger picture, they'll be happy that they've been able to do that, and it might encourage people who are leaving bigger clubs to go to them and try and do the same.
Obviously your goal scoring record's been tremendous. There's been talk of big clubs looking at you. I mean, how difficult has that been just to keep your mind focused just on the action?
People always ask that, but it's not until it actually happens. I think you take much interest in it until something's happening. Or it's not something I really bother, but I'm not thinking about it when I'm on a pitch anyway for that way. I mean, it's just when you start a game, you're involved in that, so it doesn't really make much of a difference, but it's just obviously good getting spoke about in that way.
Is that what strikers are like? You seem to thrive on being seen as Ayr's number one man, even if you've been games coming back from that injury, coming off the bench, everybody's wanting you on the field. Is that quite a good feeling to be valued like that and want?
It is, aye, but if you get a good record, it's obviously it's going to go that way, you know what I mean? And luckily enough, I've been able to keep my record up to a decent level this season, and I'm happy with that. So people might see it as like number one, but Moff's been brilliant all season as well. Moody, when he was in, he's doing a bit as well, so I'm lucky he's got injured a few times and missed it that way, but it's been a real effort for everybody.
Do you feel ready to make a step back up to Premier League? Because obviously the move to Aberdeen didn't quite work out as you'd hoped, but do you feel now you'd be a better place to handle it?
Yeah, I've played two full seasons of football now, you know what I mean, and I've done well, and probably people will doubt me a wee bit this season because I'd been in the Championship and they've done that great, and it's been good to go there and show that I can play that level. You know what I mean, if I get the chance to go and play in the Premier League or whatever it is, then I'm looking forward to it.
In League One, the nominees were Dale Hilson, Bobby Lynn, Kevin Nisbet and Dom Thomas. Can we look past Bobby Lynn for this one, Tom?
I think you probably just went kind of. I would give it to Bobby Lynn. I've really liked the way he's played this season, but Dom Thomas has been absolutely fantastic at Dumbarton. His stats, I think I've watched them once this season, Dom Thomas. But his statistics are incredible. There's an argument to be made he's far too good for definitely League One. It could be in a promotion chasing Championship side, but you'll probably have the choice to stay part-time next season if he wants to, and could very well do that. But I think what Bobby Lynn has in his favour is he's won the league and been the best player far and away in that team, and obviously posted similar numbers to Dom Thomas. So it is pretty hard to look past Bobby Lynn, but there's some very good candidates in that league.
Yep. And again, thanks, Lewis. We can also hear what Dom Thomas had to say.
Must be a very happy man.
It's always good to be kind of nominated for an award like this. So obviously the players you play against are vote. I've enjoyed playing in League One. I've played against some good players. So to be voted by your name is kind of makes it that extra bit special.
Just this season was a case of just getting out, getting some games under your belt.
Yeah, for me, I just want to play football wherever I can play. And when I could go out and loan Dumbarton were interested. So I went there and I've played football for the best part of the season and I've really enjoyed that. I think as a football player you need to be playing, improve your game, and I'm always improving my game, so I'll be playing every Saturday. It gives me the chance to do that, and well, obviously I've really enjoyed it.
Two speaks since Jim Duffy came in, he seems to have brought the best out of you. I mean, did he kind of put his arm on his shoulder or did he get a kick up the arse?
Oh, Jim's he's just a great manager to work under. He's been about, he's been at the highest level, so it's good to learn off guys like that. And you say he's been really good with me. He's kind of gave me that freedom that I enjoy having when I play. His training's been good and the results have been good, and it's been a decent kind of season since Jim came in.
He also seems a guy that you've got extra responsibility as well as he's kind of main creator.
Yeah, I kind of putting that on me and enjoy playing with that bit of pressure. I know I need to create chances and score goals, but I think that just makes you want to play better, and I like having that kind of bit of responsibility that he's gave me, and hopefully I've repaid him.
And finally in League 2, the four nominations were Blair Henderson, John Rankin, David Goodwillie and Chris Johnston. Obviously John Rankin, David Goodwillie's nominations, it could be from an era gone by, but here they are in League 2 still doing well. Gamba, I know you watch League 2 every single week. What out of these four, who would be your pick of the bunch?
Henderson. Blair Henderson. Yeah.
I mean, the sheer number of goals he's scored.
Aye. Well, I mean, also because I think, is Edinburgh City not our unofficial team of the podcast? Is that not?
Yes.
Some reason, I think that's still a thing.
It is a thing, and Edinburgh City are our team of the podcast. We do support Edinburgh City.
I'm sure that was a thing that happened a few years ago with all the boys that are no longer on the podcast. They picked them for some reason. So no, I think out of the solidarity with our team, we should give it to Blair Henderson, and because goals, for the exactly same reason that Dolby's getting that as well, and that Bobby Lynn's getting it as well, goals.
Yep. Sadly, we don't have an interview for anyone in League Two.
Lewis Burrell's sacked.
But yeah, good luck to all of them, and we'll probably hear about the Premiership Player of the Year nominations in the coming week, I'd imagine. It's getting to that kind of time of year. I think we should also probably touch on, given a big talking point, is the sad passing of Billy McNeil this week. Gamba, obviously you were at the Celtic game.
Yes.
Kind of poignant tributes paid to Billy McNeil, and obviously the goal scored by Simunovic in the 67 minutes on the clock.
Yes.
Were you crying? Was it? All seemed quite a big occasion in terms of everything on top of the stadium. Just seemed a kind of nice way to pay respects to one of Scotland's greatest ever football players.
Aye, certainly before the game there was. Wasn't the only one, you know. there was a wee tear shed before the game. It's they had a really nice video package of kind of highlights of him as a manager and as a player. There's the goal 65 cup final against Dunfermline, which, you know, is the kind of, that's the moment, that's the starting moment of the Steen era at Celtic. That's him kind of announcing, here we are, we're just going to win everything. And I would, if there are any Celtic fans that are listening that haven't already listened to it, I would recommend going onto the Celtic Wiki and downloading the podcast where it's Chris, one of the Lost Boys, talks to one of the Celtic historians about the 60s. You'll get all the stuff you already know about the Lions and Lisbon, but certainly the early Steen stuff is really, really interesting, and they go on about how important that game is and that header going in. But the bit you really, really hit you hard is the clip of him in Lisbon with the big cup, and just the noise in the stadium when that was on. It really kind of hit you hard, because like it's just not going to happen again, and he's the only guy that's gonna do that. And I know he was a kind of mythical figure when he was alive, and you know now he is, you know, just, you know, he always has been, you know, part of the fabric of Celtics, especially in terms of a player and a manager. But just seeing that kind of there, and it's just like, that's kind of a part of the club's history that's now kind of gone. But you know, it was you know, really great just seeing everyone, you know, everyone kind of shown what he kind of meant to the club, because he is, you know, one of the biggest figures certainly in terms of as a player. But again, you know, it's Tony Sings means so much to Celtic, but I know Ryan, he was there at Aberdeen as well, and I know he had, I mean, not a crucial part in our history, but an interesting, certainly kind of pre-Fergie type thing for you guys as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's sort of well known for everything he'd done at Celtic, and rightly so. Will be the only ever Scottish person to lift the European Cup as a captain of a Scottish football team.
I was talking to my dad about that, and I was saying, like, you know, there's a fair chance Andy Robertson could lift the European Cup this season, but again, he will fit into the guys like Darren Fletcher who will lift it playing for foreign teams. You know, that won't happen again. There's Greg, and there's Willie Miller, and those are the only three. It's really sad when you think about it now.
Yeah, sadly it's an era gone by that we can't really have any memories of. But you're right in terms of, obviously, McNeil was the predecessor to Ferguson at Aberdeen, and actually moulded Fergie's team for him. They signed players like Neil Simpson and Gordon Strachan at Aberdeen, and kind of laid the foundations of his successes in the years to come. So he's kind of a revered figure around Aberdeen as well, although that his season in charge was a season of near misses. He did kind of lay those important foundations for, obviously, Alex Ferguson to come in and dominate Scottish football. So I think it's just a sad time for Scottish football, but at the same time, important to remember what he achieved, which was pretty remarkable.
pretty fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, probably the best thing that Scottish football will ever do. So I feel like we had to kind of mention that on the podcast. To kind of keep with that theme, I thought I'd ask both of you the best centre-back you've seen play for your club. Obviously, Gamba, you won't have seen Billy McNeil play for Celtic. But
no.
In the number five or six of the green and white hoop top, who would you be here?
I mean anyone my age, I think, and probably quite a few years older than me, I think would have to say Virgil van Dijk. It's not close.
I always remember him getting sent off at Pittodrie after Peter Pollard skipped past him.
Oh God, yes.
No shame in that.
although one of our other greatest captains did pop up a winner in that game, right? It's Van Dijk. It's Van Dijk by far and away, because it was really interesting, because I remember towards the kind of end at Celtic, I remember just being like, the thing with Van Dijk is playing Scottish football, it looks a bit too easy for him, and I wonder if he'll struggle down south. Just because he's kind of had this time of being in Scottish football, the main times have been tests has been the Champions League. He goes down there. I remember listening to Tony Cascarino talking about Van Dijk down at Southampton. He's just like, football's too easy for this guy. And we were just kind of like, I remember listening to that and thinking, like, right, okay, it just wasn't Scottish football at all. It was just, he's just an incredible, incredible player.
Well, I always remember Paul Merson saying that he'll struggle in the Premier League because he hasn't had to head the ball in Scotland. I'm pretty sure that's all he's had to do, but cool.
But it was just that thing where kind of Cascarino talked about him playing in the Premier League, and he was just kind of like, actually, the game down here is too easy for him. Just like, where would they honestly have to play for it, like, to actually be challenged? Probably as a midfielder. Actually, his most difficult time was when he was played as a striker against Greenock Morton. probably the worst performance I've seen him put in. But not even close. Close second, though, Glenn Leuven's definitely.
Honourable mention. Tom, Mark Reynolds.
The person on my list played for Rangers United only slightly longer than Reynolds has. An honourable mention, Steely Wilkie, Yaroslav Fojut, but Andy Webster was just an absolute colossus in the year we won the Scottish Cup 2010. He was just so, so good, so calm, which you didn't always get. Really disappointed he didn't stay as well. We all thought he was too good to stay, and that proved right. Always wonder what sort of career he would have had if he hadn't been so injury prone, because I think season United was the one where he had probably the best runner in a team, and that showed how good he was. Just holds such a dear place in my heart, and but Lee Wilkie was there a wee bit longer. Darren Dodds as well was another one that was really good. Jarl Fodjut was mental and a very, very good centre-half, but he also left after years. Thought if he'd stayed a bit longer, we wouldn't have gone down. But I think in terms of just the best player was Andy Webster, who was just so composed, which watching Dundee United from almost before 2007, in my lifetime, there wasn't really a composed centre-half, and then out comes Andy Webster, who just strolled it, really. Maybe not quite to the same extent as Virgil van Dijk, but a very, very good centre-half, nonetheless.
Yep. Correct. Mine's would probably Russell Anderson. Probably because Aberdeen haven't had a lot of great centre-backs, but I think Anderson, given just kind of his... I think he totaled over 400 appearances for Aberdeen, and one of his last appearances was actually lifting a trophy as captain of the club, so kind of a nice sort of wee poignant story for him. I think his first appearance for Aberdeen was in 1996, even before I was born, so I kind of grown up watching Russell Anderson before he went down to Derby for a couple of seasons at Aberdeen, and I think he was just unlucky down at Derby, otherwise I think he might have made it in English football, because I think he is definitely, we've never really properly replaced him. With him and Reynolds at centre back in 2013-14, Aberdeen were just excellent at the back, and although we have sort of been decent defensively here and there over the seasons, it's never really been the same without Russell Anderson at the back, and I think he now works for Aberdeen Considine. But yep, definitely Russell Anderson for me. And I think we will move on if anybody else doesn't want to chuck in with anything about centre backs or Billy McNeil.
I think thing all's been said.
Good stuff. I think finally we've got the honorary quiz from Tom McKinnon. I think I'll hand over to yourself for this one.
Yeah, it's time for the highlight of the show. Everyone's favourite part, and definitely my favourite part anyway.
Yeah, we should add a sound effect in for this, but and now it's time for everyone's favourite part of the show.
I could sing a wee intro if you wanted.
No, we'll not go with that. We can put in birds singing.
Yeah, bird song, man. You know, you're fine. You're laughing.
I have had a few complaints. Not complaints, per se, but maybe it's been a wee bit tricky in the last couple of weeks, so I've made it slightly easier. I will return to making it really hard in future. But what I want, and it's going to be the same bidding process, so for any new listeners who've made it this far, what we do is we do a bidding process, so there's X amount of answers, and I would like, firstly, Gamba to state how many he would get out of 11 for this one, and then if he says 5, Ryan will say name them, or he will have to better it. So,
Why do I always have to...
I'll be asking Gamba first, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, so just... I'd appreciate if you'd respect the quizmaster as well at all times.
Please respect the kicker. Right, anyway, here we go.
Right.
Boo!
So... Andrew Gamba, I would like you and everyone at home to bid on how many of last year's PFA Team of the Year for the Premiership that you can name.
Jesus.
Five.
Ryan Crombie, can you beat that, or would you like Gamba to name them?
I take it's PFA Team of the Year in Scotland, yeah.
Yeah, We bit off-brand if it was the Belgian Premier League.
Yeah, I'll say I could go higher than that.
Right, so all I need is 6 from you. I need 6 players in the last year's PFA Team of the Year for the Premiership.
Right, name them from me.
Right, top scorer was Chris Boyd, so he'll be in there.
Correct.
There's one. 5 to go. Mm-hmm. See, I've not bottled it this week. You'll be glad to know.
First time for everything.
McKenna.
Correct.
I think he was only Aberdeen player in there.
We need 4 more.
Am I getting that he's only Aberdeen player in there?
That is correct.
Right, okay. So Boyd, McKenna. Tierney?
Correct. Halfway there.
Halfway there. Kenna Tierney. Who also plays for Celtic? Scott Brown.
Correct. Two more Ryan.
I'll also say Forrest.
Sure. James Forrest, Ryan Crombie.
Yeah, James Forrest.
Is on the list. You've got one left to go here.
One left to go.
Mm-hmm.
God, I'm actually doing quite well here. Mm-hmm. Do I get any, like, wrong?
No. I thought this question was too easy for wrong answers.
Who was good last season? Who left? Oh, John McGinn.
Ryan Crombie, to take home the illustrious prize of the Tom McKinnon End of Burst Ball episode quiz, John McGinn is correct. Well done.
Excellent.
Andrew Gamble, would you like to hazard a guess?
Do I receive the medal in the post?
Yeah. I'll send you something in the post.
We won't expand on that.
Would Tavernier get on the list?
Yep. He played right back in this imaginary team.
Morelos?
Morelos was not on this.
Not in the list. Interesting. Nope. Sad.
Would you like me to go through there?
Yeah, go for it.
In goals, you had now Sunderland shortstopper John McLaughlin. As mentioned by Gamble, we've got Tavernier right back. McKenna, Ryan, you were right, the centre half, alongside Christoph Berra.
Berra.
Tierney was left back. Mm-hmm. Forrest was playing on the wing.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Brown, John McGinn, and Dylan McGeoch, also of Sunderland. And Chris Boyd up front, partnered by soon-to-be Rangers man Jordan Jones.
Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I did quite well there.
Mm-hmm. See what happens when you don't sit on the fence?
Yeah. Guess we're us. to kind of do a bit of a walk back here, just if that's the end of your quiz, Tom.
Yeah, for this week.
I did say earlier that I would read people's best centre-backs out on the podcast, and I feel like I'd be breaking a promise if I didn't read them out to the two people who have got in touch. So, Callum Fisher, whose name will be a bit of unfamiliar to this podcast.
His favourite centre. The last episode was decannoned, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly. His favourite centre-back or best centre-back he's seen is Emilson Krabari.
Yes.
A true colossus of a man. I'm not sure if I've nailed the
Champions League experience, I believe. Am I right in thinking? Mm. Tom, surely. Well, no.
Once again, being up Ben Nevis as left my stats at home.
I remember that was when they were in Division 3, wasn't it? And it was like they're signing this guy. He's like, "It's a Champions League experience. It'll be great." And then it was Stalin Albion like next week.
and Doc, yeah, Doc agreed with you, Gamba. Obviously, a Celtic fan in his generation, Virgil van Dijk. So thanks to those two for getting in touch. Your names have now been read out in the Burstball podcast.
I feel it's a bit of a cheat saying Van Dijk because, I mean, he is arguably one of the best players I've ever seen. So,
But, I mean, therefore, he has to be one of the best centre-backs you've ever seen. So it does kind of work.
So, yeah. Uh-huh. No, it's one of those ones where like, you go through like, your best live 11. I remember doing that, and it's that way where like, Van Dijk's there. And it's like, oh, it's a bit of a cheat. I don't know. Kind of saw him every week. But anyway.
Mm.
Yeah, Glenn
Lovins. Exactly. Yeah, Glenn Lovins. and with that, I think we will end the podcast. Thanks to you, Andrew Gamba, for joining us from your nature walk.
Yeah, I really, really do apologise to everyone about the background noise of the podcast. Hopefully not a common feature.
Don't apologise. I think it adds a nice relaxing setting to the Senate. To the recording of the podcast, and thank you to Tom, who doesn't appear to be as affected despite being up the top of the highest mountain in Scotland.
No, I've begun my descent, so it's all, as they say, it's all downhill from here.
I can do your football team from joining uni. And also thanks to Johnny Clark and Lewis Burrow for their contributions. We will be speaking to you in 2 weeks' time on the podcast, but hopefully on our Twitter and social media channels as well. Until then, goodbye.